Welcome, everyone, to Renegade Radio. We're excited to have another great episode here today, brought to you, as always, by Renegade Concepts and the good folks here at Business Radio X. Today, our guests are going to be Brian Mould from Better Office Systems and Deborah Lanham from the Greater North Fulton Chamber of Commerce. She's also joined by one of the Greater North Fulton Chamber of Commerce members, Mr. Pat McCardle. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, welcome.
Well, we're going to go ladies first today. So, Deborah, let me start with you. Now, this is going to sound like an obvious question, but let's cover the basics for the listeners out there. Tell us a little bit about the Greater North Fulton Chamber of Commerce. What is it and what do you guys do?
The Greater North Fulton Chamber of Commerce is located right in the heart of Alpharetta, and we are a chamber that serves the six cities of North Fulton, and that would include Sandy Springs, Roswell, Alpharetta, Milton, Mountain Park, and Johns Creek.
So how do you help businesses? I mean, again, a lot of people think they know what a chamber of commerce is, but for those who might not, and maybe even those that do, give us a recap. What is a chamber going to do to help my business?
Well, the Chamber of Commerce has gone far back. We have our headquarters in Washington, D.C. There is a national chamber of commerce. We have a Georgia chamber of commerce, and then you see the other chambers start to develop within cities. So North Fulton Chamber of Commerce is unique in that we're not the only chamber in the county. We serve six cities where some chambers are just one city focused. But we are membership-based, I need to say that, and a nonprofit organization. So we depend on the membership in order for us to do what we do, which is to be a collective voice on behalf of business to all the things that concern business owners. So how we benefit, number one, through membership is to give you the visibility you need as a business within the area you are wanting to do business in, and then find ways to drive success.
Now, speaking of ways to drive success, when people join the chamber, it still doesn't take the responsibility off of them to run and be successful in their business, right? I know some people's perception is, oh, I paid my dues, why isn't business coming in my door?
That is true, and I'll even go one further. They will say, okay, what are the shortcuts to get me to the people I want to talk to and get me right up to the top?
Right.
And it is work on behalf of the business owner or the employee of a business that is out doing the marketing, for example, for that business. There aren't shortcuts, but what we will give you is a rich membership. We have over 1,200 members. That is something you have access to immediately. We work hard to develop an environment where business members are doing business with one another. So yeah, get involved. That's a great and initial place to start. But beyond that, I'm the director of membership services for the chamber, and we want to make sure that we're hearing what your needs and special challenges are as a business person, as a business owner. And 45% of our membership is built on that small business owner, 10 employees or less. And so we like to help you with your marketing plan. We can certainly get you in front of the folks that you want to get in front of, but it takes some planning and being strategic, and then we go to work for you.
Well, let's talk about how some of that stuff happens. I mean, obviously, you're the director of membership there, so I'm gonna put you in a box and call you a salesperson because you know I love salespeople, and I love you, so I'm gonna pull over to Pat here, though. Pat, you're a member of the Greater North Fulton Chamber of Commerce. Tell us a little bit about your experience and how it's been helpful in you growing your business.
Sure, Andy. I've been a member of the chamber since 1995. That was when I started my business in financial planning. I left the corporate world, and I lived in Sandy Springs, and I wanted to know more about the community, and so that's one reason I joined the chamber, but I stayed. I mean, unlike many, as you know, Deborah will tell you, many new members join. They come to one meeting, and then they don't stay. They, you know, they get busy with their business, and then they go out of business, and they wonder what happened. And I didn't do that. I wanted to get involved. And the chamber gives you lots of opportunities to get involved in all parts of the greater North Fulton area. And it's just been it's a pay it forward approach. The more you get involved, the more. When I go to a chamber member now, it's not who I know, but who knows me. And that takes time to get to that point.
Well, it's an interesting thing you said, and a perspective that I don't think some people walk in with. You said you joined the chamber to learn about the community. And that's one thing I think really is awesome about the Greater North Fulton Chamber is that it really is very community-oriented. And you can plug in and you can learn. Brandon Beach, the head of the Greater North Fulton Chamber. Obviously, I mean, he is super passionate about the community. He's been on our show before. And and very involved, very active in the community, and so are many of the chamber members that I've met and developed friendships with over the years. Has that been the experience, Deborah, that you hear feedback from members as well?
Absolutely, and some of these folks that are involved, we've seen them grow up in the community. This is a great place to live. We heard the other day that when they describe North Fulton, it's 360 degrees of gold. It's a wonderful environment, great place to do business, but also to raise a family and to be involved in your community. And so the Chamber's very much involved in making sure you see the different components of Chamber membership. Not only is it about business and the success of business, but also working on all of those things that make this community what it is today, which is a great environment for family.
We just saw an amazing display of that at the expo a couple weeks ago. I mean, that was an amazing turnout of people out supporting the community, out supporting businesses, people doing business. I mean, that's a highlight of my year every year is that expo.
It's a great event.
It really is. Pat, you were there as well.
Yeah, it was. It was fantastic. New people that are showing up, it was a big attendance, I think 1,700 people, and so probably half of them had never been a part of the chamber before, and the other half were part of it, and they knew what to expect, and they were there, and so it really brings the community together, and your friends are there, as well as your business associates, your clients, so why would you not be there?
Exactly. So, Deborah, you had an interesting topic that you wanted to talk about today, so I kind of want to dive into it. I mean, you know, normally when people come on the show, they tend to want to talk about their businesses and what their businesses do, and that's great. But you wanted to go a little different direction. You wanted to talk about the art of leading, which, from a chamber, isn't what you would expect to hear. I mean, you would want to hear about community. You'd want to hear about the involvement, some of the things we talked about so far. But tell me what you mean by the art of leading. What is going on at the North Fulton Chamber that's got you guys passionate about that topic?
This is a new position for me, Director of Membership Services, sales, as you'd like to say. And I'm a salesperson at heart and always will be. But immediately being put in a leadership position, realized there really is a style or an art to leading. And with the current economic conditions that we've been all living for the last few years, leaders are stressed, managers are stressed. And so I've just taken a look at that and have a passion to make sure not only are we bringing in new memberships, but then looking at those members that come in that are leading a team or their company. But there is an art to leading, and you know, just wanted to encourage people. And so part of what I do when I sit down with a business and talk about membership is also to say, how are you doing in today's economy?
Yeah, which that in itself is a question you have to kind of sift through a bit, because the common answer is, hey, how's it going? Great.
Yeah.
And it's often not going great.
Right. But and really, how is it going?
Right, yeah. Right. So tell me this. You said there's six steps to reigniting the leader within you and getting your business back on track. So let's go through those real quick. So
sure.
You said clear the course. So let's just take them one by one and tell me what you mean by these steps. Clear
okay.
The course. What are we talking here?
Well, briefly, just when you take a look at the path that you're on, what are the obstacles that have been there for a while or are new to you? But just identify obstacles and find ways to get rid of them. Sometimes you just can't, and we all understand that. But if you really take time to sit back, identify the obstacles, maybe budget, whatever those would be, identify them and find ways to remove them so that you can continue down the path you're going. So a lot of leaders, there's really just one way we've got to get there. We're trying to make new clients. And so take a look at what's there. Also, find ways to be more efficient. You know, sometimes the minutiae just drags leaders, managers down, and you have to find a way to work through that and remove the things that get in the way, the day-to-day, just the paperwork, the compliance issues you may have. So that would be one, clearing the course. It helps you stay on track. It reminds you of what the focus is. And, you know, sometimes you just have to say that obstacle is not going to move, but we'll find ways to deal with it.
Right. And the minutiae is a great thing that you brought up there, because that is a huge element oftentimes. You know, his classic Stephen Covey, as he talks about, you know, things that are important versus urgent. And when you think about interruptions, I heard once that an average interruption takes 7 minutes to recover from, because, you know, it disrupts
it.
You on the front end. It takes a couple minutes to deal with the interruption. And then there's about, you know, 3 or 4 minutes on the back end just to get back into the rhythm of what you were doing before. So every time you get interrupted, somebody walk in your office, a phone call, the email, you've got mail or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, then you get a 7-minute disruption of your day. And it only takes a couple of those an hour to really waste the entire hour.
Oh, it's so true. And we're really distracted with technology. It's wonderful to have. But now we have our phone going off, our email going off. The phone is still ringing. I mean, people still talk on the phone. And those things do get in the way. And time management, you know, we've heard that for years. But again, just what are the things that you can do to clear your course and to continue at a great pace that, you need to be running at to be efficient?
Well, let's talk about pace. You say step number two is set the pace. How do you set the pace in an organization?
Well, it depends. Again, you're looking at baseline information as a reminder to what is important and the pace that we do need to set. And then stay true to that pace. You do need to take time. I heard the other day a top leader in our country with an organization was talking about life and work balance. What is that? Really, it's all mixed in together. And again, you set that pace. You find that you may have inconsistencies. Let's say you're a manager of a team and everybody's moving at a different pace. You've got a sales cycle that for one might be, you know, turn around in a week. For another, they've dragged something out for over a month and longer. And there's some natural reasons for why things don't get closed in terms of selling. But try to get everybody on the pace that you as a leader set. A sense of urgency might be important to you that this is taking too long. And, that's where the art comes in. How do you do that effectively? And I'm still discovering how to do that because I'm working with different personalities myself. And motivation comes in there as a part of it, incentives. So make sure the pace that you're setting also has some rewards attached to it.
So fine-tune the story, step number three. What story are you fine-tuning, though?
Well, for the Chamber of Commerce, we have a beautiful story to tell. Our messaging is wonderful. We love being a part of the community and our work as a chamber. And so that's a great story to tell. But sometimes, again, you can lose sight of what really is important as a chamber and what you're talking about because there's so many things we could be talking about. And economic development is a big one, and it's a real buzzword these days. Everybody's creating economic development departments, but fine-tune that story. There may be some things that need to be added to your story. You need to maybe the history is now not really interesting to people. It's not fresh. So I think it's important when you're going out and messaging your business, make sure that you are fine-tuning that story and keep it short. People, we are working on those elevator speeches. We do that all the time at networking. But I've heard the same, Pat, you can be a witness to this. Some of the lines or the 30-second elevator pitches we've heard for 3 years. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to change it up a bit and be creative in telling a new story or add a new chapter to your story.
That's true. Is it kind of how it is, Pat? Yeah. Do you see a lot of that?
Yeah, many people don't change it up a bit, and then their business doesn't change. You keep doing what you're doing, you're going to keep getting what you're getting, and that's a perfect opportunity to hear others and hear something new from them and say, wow, I should change what I'm saying. Yeah, I'm doing more than what I told you in 30 seconds. Why don't I take next week and tell you something different?
Right. Okay, good. So let's move on with step number four, discover the talent.
I think it's important that as a manager, you look at everyone on your team as a talented individual. And with their strengths, there will be weaknesses. And that's not going to change. But I think sometimes you get frustrated that results aren't coming quickly. And you have a lot of pressure on you to make the numbers and to be successful. And so it's important to, again, step back, look at the talent you have, and discover something new in the people that you have working for you. And as a leader, that is a reminder that you're just like them, that you're no different. You have strengths and you have weaknesses, and they may view you in a way that isn't very favorable. So it keeps a good rapport, and it gives the team a little more energy needed and focus and loyalty to one another to get the job done, which, again, is to get more clients, get more business, go where the money is. And so I think it's important to look at your people as talented, celebrate that talent that you have. And, quite frankly, sometimes you just have to remove individuals that aren't doing what you need them to do. And that's the reality of, doing business and being a manager is making some tough decisions. But I think that with all of the tools that are available to us today, coaching, learning new sales techniques, find out what maybe some significant changes could be made through providing resources to your team to enhance the talent.
Well, this was a hot button for me, and you know this because you and I have been friends for a long time.
Yes,
but,
we have.
I'm a big proponent of spending time on strengths and not a great deal of time on weaknesses. And I find that in the business world, many people do just the opposite. They spend the majority of their time trying to fix the weaknesses of their team instead of leveraging the strengths and the talents.
That is so true.
Pat, have you seen that? In the financial world, you have to have seen that.
And also, I was just making an analogy to the athletic world. Some of the best coaches, the best teams that have loyalty and strengths, they certainly don't have the heavyweights trying to run the ball. They have them on the line because that's their strength.
Right.
And coaches can bring out the best, and they can make everybody feel very, very valuable to the team. And I think what Debbie was saying was very, very clear.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's a real hot button for me because I see so much. And, yeah, and I'm not saying you never work on a weakness. You never try to improve in mm-hmm. some areas. You know, likewise, I see a lot of companies, again, you guys can speak to this, that not only in the individual do they spend time on the weaknesses, but managers tend to spend the majority of their time working with the weakest members of the team and neglecting the strongest players. Whereas my theory is, promote your strong players. They need the feedback. They need the positive encouragement. They want to know that you're invested in them. And I get a lot more productivity out of putting my time and resources into my top performers than trying to coddle the bottom performers that may never be good performers anyway.
You are so right. And I have seen that in past work experience and environments where you weren't celebrating the one that really could lead the team, just naturally are gifted and great at selling, and you just count on them to do well, and you count on them to bring in that business, and so you are focusing on the wrong people, but yet empower that salesperson that's very talented and bringing it in, and have them impart some of their techniques and secrets maybe to the rest of the team, and then they want to work harder for you, and they appreciate you looking at them and identifying that leadership role that they can naturally take on as well.
So two more steps here. Let's get through these. We've got determine the capacity.
I think, again, what are the realistic goals? Make sure you're setting realistic goals, and there is a limit to what people can hold. What can your team hold? Again, identify that. And then, I read the other day that 69% of companies with structured programs have higher success in retention. And you need to make sure that you're providing a structured environment where everybody understands the goals, everybody understands how we're going to get there, and then and just make sure you're not overloading them with unrealistic expectations. I know we've heard that before, but it's really true. If it gets too loose and there aren't structured programs for your people to follow and be a part of, then it's difficult to really end up being successful. They go around in circles. They just feel overwhelmed. And again, the opposite is true. If they're underperforming, they have capacity to do so much more and give them more responsibility and allow them the freedom to go out. And I had that situation recently where I opened something up and allowed a rep who showed initiative and wanted to attack and saw that they had the capacity to do it, go for it. Let's see what we can do and go for it.
Now, do you see in this spot here, because I think it jumps in my mind, a lot of people, they hear the word goals and, you know, they get all deer in the headlights, you know, because when you think of a goal or I'm going to put a different word on it, we're going to say quota, because that's where we get with a lot of sales and performance metrics. It's all about hitting that goal, and if you don't hit the goal, then somehow you didn't do well, and people don't know. That's why at the end of the quarter, they're scrambling, you know, trying to decide, am I going to be able to push through and get stuff out of the pipeline? But don't you think it's important to focus on the daily success habits that really get you ultimately to the goal? I mean, you know, I trained for an Ironman race last year, and yeah, the ultimate goal was to cover 140.6 miles, but it was really about day-to-day getting up out of bed at the right time, eating the right food, and doing the right training to get to the big goal. the big goal was just a celebration of all the consistent work. And shouldn't we be teaching our people that same thing, daily success habits to get to the goal, not just emphasis on the goal?
Yeah, back to the coaching analogy, that's why the coaches make you do push-ups every day or run laps every day. And you're not going to do that in the game, but those steps that you do every day are important. And most people don't have a daily routine. And if you have a routine, that will protect you from a lot of these six steps or allow you get you on track to a lot of the six steps of what you're going to do. In other words, do things on purpose, not let those interruptions get in the way. You have a purpose when you were training early in the morning for the marathon. I mean, that was the only thing you were doing, and you were there on time, and you did it on purpose, and therefore it got done. If you waited till 5 o'clock, say, well, maybe I'll go to the gym, maybe I won't, you know what would have happened.
That's right, absolutely. And I didn't check my email during the during the training. Well, let me stop. Hang on, I got an email from somebody.
Congratulations, by the way, on that. That was wonderful.
Thank you, I appreciate that. All right, last step. Step six, value the process.
Well, you need to value every step of the way. And you probably can look back at what you just accomplished and you can see the process and the days that you didn't feel like getting up and didn't feel like doing what needed to be done.
That was most of them.
Right? Okay.
That was most days.
You could feel the pain of what you were doing. But at a point, you're going to look, oh my gosh, that was an amazing thing that I accomplished. It's a great feeling, and there's value placed on that. I think I've learned early in life that everything you go through in life, there's a reason for it, and there's value in experiencing those things. And a big reason is because you suddenly can identify with someone else who's going through that, and you're put in positions where you can encourage others. I think we're all people, and so it's important that we stay people with one another and be real. But I think valuing, when we invest in people, over time it does pay off. And so valuing people, valuing the process, managers want to get things done quickly. You don't have time. You know, one thing that's changed for me in this position is that I want a quick answer. I don't want the long story. I need you to tell me quickly what it is you need done. And, or if I have a question, I want that quick answer. And I had to learn to be a little patient and step back and realize again, there's a process. And, yet to be efficient as a manager, there's some things that are required of me. There's a bigger picture. And I think that other people will value the time you spend with them and investing in their success, and it'll come around, and I'll experience that as well because people are being patient with me and valuing what I'm adding to this mix, and it's a great feeling.
Well, this has been great information, and I want to come back to it before we wrap up today, but in the meantime, let me get Brian in the conversation. You guys mind hanging out for a few minutes while we visit with Brian?
Hi, Brian.
Awesome. Brian, welcome to the show, sir. So you're
Hi.
With Better Office Systems. Tell us a little bit about Better Office Systems, who you guys are, and what you do.
Yeah, Better Office Systems is a single source provider for our clients for office technology. So our goal is to be able to provide everything that our customers need to be able to run their office, run their business, okay, with one vendor, and be able to focus on doing their business without worrying about how their office technology, their equipment, et cetera, is working. We take care of that for them.
So tell me how that niche plays in, because when I start thinking of office technology, one part of my brain, because I'm an old IT guy, starts going towards the IT systems and that side of things, and I think about IT outsourcing. Then the other side starts thinking, no, come back to office equipment, printers, copiers, things of that nature. Where exactly in that mix are you guys as far as engaging businesses?
Well, we're a Toshiba dealer, so we provide all the Toshiba product to our clients. So we have a full range of equipment, which is black and white, color, and all the technology with regards to that. We also we deal with HP printers, Lexmark printers, etc., even wide format machines, KIP wide format machines. But we also have IT services that we provide to small companies. Our niche in life is being able to provide professional services for companies that are, let's say, 10 to 250 employees, and be able to provide the same kind of technology and pricing that the Fortune 1000 companies are able to get.
Well, that sounds like good incentive.
Well, I think that the smaller businesses are frequently overlooked. And especially now when you're looking at so many companies that have cut so far back to the bone that they obviously have to run their business, they've got to attempt to grow their business in the current climate, that they frequently don't have people who can look at, okay, what should I be paying for this product? And too frequently overpay for that product because they may put a junior individual in that arena. Because obviously the owners of the company have got to continue to focus on growing the company.
Okay, so let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, staffing clearly is an issue, and it's pretty resource intensive. I always find this interesting in small business. People don't really know the value of time of the person that they're putting on a task. Mm-hmm. I mean, they take somebody that they're paying $20 an hour, and they put them on a task that could easily be outsourced for less money than that. Or maybe they, as the owner, even take it on themselves. I talked to somebody the other day who was dealing with a laptop as mm-hmm. an owner mm-hmm. and put in a couple of hours on a project only to end in frustration and have to end up calling support, which fixed the problem in about 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. It was an extreme out of balance value. Do you help companies sit down and really assess what someone like you would provide in value versus what they may be spending inside their own organization to accomplish the same goals?
Yeah, one of the things that we do is we go into companies and we look at it and we talk to them, but we can come in and basically provide a type of audit for all the services that they are actually utilizing internally. So whether it be personnel, whether it be equipment, et cetera, we can look at it, and a quick example would be something like, there's such a great ability now to be able to look on the internet for pricing. But if you have somebody who's being paid $20 an hour to be continuously looking on the internet for pricing for something like a toner cartridge, then very quickly any money that you have actually saved on that toner cartridge, you suddenly spent on the individual that you have reporting to you. So we look at that, and we will look at ways to be able to set up pricing for all their office products and their office equipment and be able to see if we can find a way to be able to save them money and save them time. But we always look at the hard dollar cost savings first. Understandably, clients are very, very concerned about what they consider to be a soft cost reduction in payment. So we will look at the hard dollar cost savings, and then we'll say to them, plus, you will also get this as an additional benefit. This individual will no longer have to perform this function for you. They can get on with other business within your company.
Let me come back to that in just a second. Back up one step, you said you do this audit for company. Is that a paid service, or is this something you do as part of the initial engagement?
No, it's part of the initial engagement. We go into companies and we look at everything that they're doing, whether it be their copy of leases, whether it be their print management, whether it be the supplies that they are purchasing. We even look at areas that we don't primarily furnish product for to be able to give them a potential solution to be able to save money.
How do you fill those areas? Do you have vendors, partners that you work with?
Yeah, we have preferred vendors that we work with that we know their pricing, we know their ability to be able to associate with clients, we know their quality. And we can say in areas that we don't work, look, here's a vendor for phone systems, for instance. We don't do phone systems, but we have a couple of our preferred vendors who, in fact, do phone systems, and we know that they will do a great job, they will give great service, and they will give great pricing. And they won't encumber one of our customers with a long-term pricing structure that is just not beneficial to them.
And how do you manage that process on the back end? If I use you for my copiers and printers and some of that, and then I use one of your vendors for my phone systems, et cetera, and then I have service issues, am I calling several different people? Am I running things through you? Are you kind of my first point of contact? How does that work?
We're your first point of contact. If we have provided a service or we have said that this is a vendor that you should be utilizing, if there is an issue with that vendor, then we are the person that you contact to say there is an issue, and then we will look at the vendor, we will look at the client, and we will resolve that issue.
So you're really helping me kind of set up a one-stop shop, as it were, for a lot of my office supply needs.
And that's exactly what we look at as a company. We say that we're a single-source provider, we're one vendor with many solutions. And again, I think especially in the small to mid-sized business, it is imperative that people have that professional purchasing capability to be able to make sure that they don't make bad decisions.
What are some of the bad decisions that you've seen made by people trying to purchase copy equipment, get into these leases, maybe using other vendors than yourself?
Well, there are a lot of good companies within our area, and there's certainly nothing wrong with leasing product, especially product that over time is going to age, technology is going to change, and it needs to be refreshed out of the business. But one of the things that people do get caught up in is that they get caught up in what is a full cost per copy lease. And the kind of romance of, oh, well, I only have to pay 5 cents a page for the copies. It's almost as though the copies are prints. It's almost as though it's free. Well, it's not, because there is a base, and you're paying 5 cents for that. So if your base is 20,000 prints or copies, whether it be black and white or color, then you're going to be paying $1,000 a month for that. Now, $800 of that will be the lease, $200 of that will be for the service. But if you go over that 20,000, then you go over 10,000, you're going to pay another 500 because it's 5 cents a page. Well, you've already paid for the lease once. You're now paying for the lease again, and it should only be $100 for that service for black and white prints or copies. It should not be $500. So companies make a lot of money this way, and small individual companies get caught up in these leases without ever realizing what they're caught up in, and they're almost impossible to get out of.
Now, you mentioned a cost savings that you guys do in this audit. Do you focus on an ROI perspective, meaning if I'm looking at this lease idea, I'm thinking, well, I don't want to pay for the lease twice. Maybe it's better for me just to buy a product, or maybe even buy an inferior product for now, just to get over the hump as a small business. But I'm assuming that if I got the right equipment, there may be an ROI that I'm not thinking about. Do you guys focus on that?
Yeah, we do. We will look at what their current structure is. What is their current situation, and then we will propose a future state, if you like, and then be able to show them exactly how much they would save by going with that product. There are so many different products and great products in our environment now that you can look at, whether it be color, black and white, whether it be printers, and we can determine over a 1 year, 2 year, 3 year time period how much money they would save by comparison to what they're currently doing.
Now, my mindset helped me out here, because as a small business owner, my mindset is that I understand technology changes pretty rapidly, yet I don't really think of printers and copiers and things like that changing as rapidly. But you mentioned earlier in a conversation that the office supply business is a changing industry. What are some of the changes that are going on, and how dynamic is that change?
Well, very, very much so. Obviously, people have iPads now. We all have smartphones that we are utilizing. So the actual print capability now within organizations is changing dramatically. So you see a large shift from black and white to color. It may well be that black and white printing is being reduced in many organizations, but the ability to be able to provide vibrant color, it increases in the color arena. Okay, that's going to change over time too, as as both smartphones become more capable, and obviously the new iPads, as they become more prevalent within organizations. But that will change, and it will change consistently, and we have to change with that. And the machines themselves now, they are not just either copiers or printers; they're input-output devices. So they're utilized for scanning, printing. They're utilized as digital storage locations. So they are much more diverse and capable than they used to be.
I see. So if a business owner out there is exploring this idea and thinks, hey, I may need to have somebody come in and do an audit and see what's going on with my office supplies, how would they go about finding out more information about your company or getting in touch with you?
Well, just contact us at our website is bossbiz.com. The phone number is 770-845-6764. Just contact us. We're more than happy to go into any account, take a look, and see if we can save people money. And if we cannot, we'll let them know we can't. You've got a great setup. Everything's working fine for you, and at least at that point in time, the client has got an unbiased second opinion as to whether they're doing well in terms of their purchases right now.
I guess one other thing to touch on just before we kind of jump back into a group discussion here is this isn't a new business for you. This isn't something you've been at for a short time. Your expertise is fairly extensive. How long have you been in this industry?
I've been in the industry now for just over 30 years. It's actually now, where are we, 33 years that I've been in this industry. And it has changed radically over that period of time, very excitingly so. And our offerings have also, changed because of that. When I first got into this business, if something could do 20 copies per minute, it was magical. Putting a document feed on something was incredible. And now the machines themselves are capable of scan to email, scan to file. There are so many things that they're able to accomplish that it is just a phenomenal difference. Plus the softwares that we have that we provide for our clients as well, and IT services. So the whole environment has changed, and it's been a very, very exciting change.
All right. Well, I want to bring Deborah and Pat back in the discussion here, and I want to pull you in here, Brian. We talked a lot about forging ahead and forging leadership, and running a company like yours obviously requires a great deal of that. You heard some of the things that we talked about in the beginning of the show. How have you seen some of those leadership focuses show up with your company?
Well, with any company, it's always a challenge to make sure that you have a structure, you have a basic structure that you work with. And when you talk about getting caught up in the minutiae, the smaller the company is, the more likely you are to get caught up in the minutiae, just because you have to get caught up in the minutiae. But it is very, very easy to get completely off track and not, in fact, be able to grow your business because you are caught up in not where are you going, but where are you stuck right now.
That's a really good point. Mm-hmm.
And that creates a big problem with your employees, too, because they don't see that there's any progress within the organization. They don't see any change. They just come in every day and see basically grinding through the same situation day in and day out. And it's very, very easy to fall back into that. You made the comment about the business owner who has been working for 2 hours to try and get something done on his laptop when what he should have in fact done immediately was get on the phone and ask somebody for help. Mm-hmm. We too frequently get caught in that. Okay, I've learned over the years that if I can go and ask somebody else for assistance and they can tell me how to do it now, instead of me thrashing through a way for me to be able to figure out how to get it done over a weekend, much better for me to make that phone call. And much better for me to get everyone else within my organization to understand the same concept, because it makes us that much more vital, and it allows us to be able to accomplish much more during a day.
See, now we're back to this idea of strengths and weaknesses, right?
We are.
You spend your time trying to be good at something you're not inherently good at, and instead of just handing it off to somebody who is strong at it.
Not only that, leaders feel that they have to have all the answers, and that the answers need to be the right answers, and that everybody's looking to them. What I have found is that a leader bringing the team in and allowing some brainstorming and getting other ideas and thoughts, because a lot of times it's the people that work for you that are out there doing the work, boots on the ground, and have a much better understanding and perspective. So let's say we get the salespeople connected to the marketing people, and they're talking to one another, and allow the room to just start sharing information, brainstorming, and suddenly you're such a great leader because you've coordinated this event, coordinate the opportunity, but it's the people that work with you and for you that are coming up with the ideas.
Yeah, I think that's such a great point that Brian brought up about, the monotony. People come in and doing the same thing every day and there's never any change. How important is it, and Pat, I know this is something that's important to you, how important is it to create culture in your organization, a fun environment, an environment where people do get to succeed and thrive and enjoy, and it's not a grind to go to work?
Well, I think when you have a fun environment and you have a culture like that, then you bring out the best of the individual. And we're all different. We all have different strengths. When I worked for IBM years ago, if I had a salesman that was good in the field and good at calling on clients but terrible with paperwork, the worst thing I could do was make them spend all day in the office
doing paperwork.
That's right. But we had that responsibility. There were other people that could help them with that, mm-hmm. and that person could go do just twice as much as anyone else in the field. And if I had made them do something different, that would be managing. That would be managing versus leading. And there's a big difference between management. There are certain projects, certain jobs that need to be managed. If it's a transition or if it's something that's a technology transition has to happen overnight, and you've got to be there and you've got to be on time. But the leader set it up in the first place and had the vision of, and the culture and got the strength, got the right players on the field.
Yeah, and fun doesn't mean not productive. I think that's interesting. You know, I've shared with you guys on an individual basis how much I learned last year in my training, and I'm going to go back to Deborah, what you said about setting the pace, because I thought this was interesting. When I first started training, you know, your mindset would be if you're going to run a race, run the whole time. That is the most productive way to go about running the race. But I actually found my pace picked up on my marathon when I ran a mile and then I walked every aid station. They were every mile you had an aid station. I would walk for 30 seconds at each aid station. And my overall pace, not just my pace between the miles, but my overall pace actually increased because I recalibrated for 30 seconds and then went back to running versus what most people do, which is a steady decline of speed over the long term. And certainly in business, you see that. People start out of the gate fast, and then they continuously slow down.
And training is what gets you to, you know, that level, and to be able to continue to operate at a level that's very efficient, and that everyone gets comfortable with. I love hockey. I'm a big hockey fan and a big Detroit Red Wing fan. And it's amazing when you start to watch the game, the pace is incredible. They're out there skating really fast, making stuff happen, you know, 30 shots on a goalie in a period. It's amazing to watch the pace. And you see those that have been trained well by the end of the third period, who's still standing, whose legs are still fresh.
Right.
They've all been, you know, grueling it out. But when you apply that to business, just making sure that people are trained, that they're given the resources they need, that, you know, provide them some food once in a while. I think it's fun to take the team out and take them out to a restaurant and take care of them and feed them. And you can go miles with just doing simple things like that. But it's important that you do, you know, sow into these folks and invest in them. And they'll pick up the pace for you if that's what's needed. But it's preparing them and training them, as you know, Andy, and you're talking about that. And it's amazing that you actually get them to go further than expected.
What do you think, Brian? How do you do some of those things with Better Office Systems?
Well, with the economic environment, the way that it's being, it's obviously been very tough, I think, for a lot of companies to be able to do that. I think one of the biggest things for us to be able to do is to look at what are the new products that we're bringing on, because they're always exciting. Okay, people can look at that. What are the different ways that we can do things? What are the new things that we can offer to our clients? And also, how can we do things differently internally to improve our own processes? Because people have a real gratification when they've had an issue with something, then they fix it and they see that the new process is working so much better, that is just a weight that they can take off their shoulders at that point in time. And then talking about food, one of the things that we've always done is the end of the month is a big deal to us. So the end of the month, we will bring food in for people to eat instead of them going out. Now, part of that is selfish because I get people to work over the lunchtime at the end of the month. But the other thing is, too, is that frankly, it is something that people look forward to. And if you like, it is a punctuation mark that we are now at the end of the month. It'll start again tomorrow, but right now we're at the end of at least we're at the end of this month. Okay, so.
Right. Yeah, so This show, we're all about breaking the rules of conventional thinking. That's obviously the tagline that I've used for years at Renegade Concepts. And I want to give you guys an opportunity before we wrap up here today. You know, just tell us a little bit about something that businesses out there need to know, maybe something you implement in your own organization or just something that's personal for you as far as business. But leave us with a renegade thought. Leave us with something that, that people should be thinking about outside of the conventional norms that they should be doing to move ahead.
I've got a good example. I think if you think outside the box, and people have heard that phrase, but if you just think about doing the opposite of what everyone else is doing. Years ago, I was in Bill Gates' office, and right behind his desk, he had this huge sign that said, "Stay paranoid." Now, I wasn't going to ask him what that meant, but one of my associates with me asked him, "What does that mean?" He said, "Well, you know, I just look at what everyone else is doing in my industry, and I just go 180 degrees the other way." And so if people would look at what they've been doing, what the grind is, and then figure out a fresh approach, it's probably going to be, it's going to feed, really make their business take another level.
Deborah, Brian, what do you guys think?
Well, mine's a product. And I think one of the things that people need to be very, very careful about is making sure that they have control of their data. And it is imperative that no matter what size organization, but certainly organizations where there is accountability, whether it be SEC, whether it be financial organizations, banks, attorneys firms, etc., doctors' offices, because so many things now are digitally contained and saved, we think that we have everything. Okay, and I thought is, well, we've got that. We've got digital storage, and we've got all that product contained. And so if we ever need it, we can pull it back out again. It's really not true. You may have it in different silos, but it is in different locations, and a lot of it can basically escape, if you like. So what people should be also looking at is a way to be able to do digital archiving of whether it be their documents, whether it be their digital documents, whether it be their emails, even voicemail, if it's that imperative to an organization. But they should look at being able to store that data so that if there's ever a compliance issue or if something comes up that they have to be able to pull up data, they could do it and do it very quickly.
Mine's in terms of liberating the people. And I think it's very liberating to learn a new technique when it comes to selling. And one that I have learned after years of selling is the idea of going after a decision. The decision is either yes or it's no, but go after that decision. So many times you don't get an answer and you're strung along. And companies take advantage of salespeople and they string it along and string it along and you don't get a decision and you're following up and you're getting nowhere. And so one thing that I have focused on is the idea of go after that decision one way or the other. It's either yes or it's no, and not be afraid of that. It's very liberating to operate that way, and one that I would say was a little outside of the box for me.
Ask early and ask often.
Yes.
I love it. And I'll add to this, since we've used the term out of the box a couple of times, you know, just for the listening audience, you know, when we talk about things that are out of the box, we tend to think of wild ideas that no one's ever thought of before. And it's really not that extreme. Sometimes out of the box thinking does not require you to be intellectually revolutionary. I wish I'd coined that term.
Amen.
I wish I'd coined that term. I didn't. I picked that up somewhere. But, you know, it's not intellectually revolutionary. It's just simply looking at things or using information in a way that is not currently being used or has not been used by other people. And some of the most brilliant ideas in history were not that abstract. They were just simple tweaks of previous information. So
agree.
I hope our audience will keep that in mind. Deborah, I want to come back to you one last time because we did not tell people how they could be part of the Greater North Fulton Chamber of Commerce, get in touch with you, and find out more information. Let's do that before we wrap up today.
Well, we're coming on a new month, and we are full with activity. They can log on to our website at gnfcc.com, Greater North Fulton Chamber of Commerce. And there's all kinds of information about the chamber, demographic information, a piece about Progress Partners, and actually a link over to the Progress Partners website, which is our branding arm of the chamber. They can also call me direct. I'd love to hear from somebody that would like to talk about what a membership could do for them. And my number directly is 678-397-0567.
Guys, great show today. Brian, Pat, Deborah, want to thank you guys all for being here today, taking the time out to join our listener audience and share what I feel like has been some great information. Hope you guys out there listening will take this and really apply it to your businesses and to your lives and move things forward and achieve the success that you're after. Join us every week as we continue meeting with great people in our business community to find out what they're doing that's unique. And remember, opportunity lies in the impossible, but you have to be willing to break the rules of conventional thinking. Until next time.